Oh, good morning and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you so much for being at the other end of the radio waves and the telephone lines and the Twitter machine and the email device and all of the other multitudinous ways we have of communicating today. We are in touch with each other 24 hours a day, which is why so many of us need additional sleep, it would seem. Hey, before we begin, a reminder, though, that you're always welcome and invited to connect by whatever trips your trigger there, 414-1234, the local telephone number, or 800-926-8809 if it's long distance. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address, and at WFSU Perspective is the address whereby you may send us a tweet. Well, back on December 2nd, as we said at the outset, there was an open forum at the FSU Law School on Zonta International's call to say no, 16 days of activism. This is the umbrella under which all this took place. Zonta panelists included folks like Robin Thompson, Marjorie Turnbull, and Kelly Dozier, and other panelists included Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare President and CEO Mark O'Brien, and County Administrator for Leon County Vince Long, and Chris Del Marco with Legal Services in North Florida, and Dr. Garnett Stokes, who was headed off to Missouri, our soon-to-be former provost here at Florida State, Dr. Elmira Mangum from FAMU, also part of that, along with Dr. Jim Murdoch from TCC and Tallahassee City Commissioner Nancy Miller, all embracing the Zonta mission and giving folks insights as to the leadership of Zonta International in the matters of saying no to violence in the workplace. Such a great discussion. We thought, gee, let's just keep it rolling, and we'll bring it to the radio and include your calls and comments along with that as well. So let's welcome back Robin Thompson, Tallahassee attorney and a major participant in the December 2nd get-together. And thank you for helping put this together, too, Robin.
You are so welcome. Thanks for having us.
The president of Zonta International Tallahassee here. SUNY Raymaker?
Well, actually, I'm the president of the Zonta Club of Tallahassee. We have an international governor. I believe she's from one of the Scandinavian countries. So, thank you.
Okay. Well, we just gave you an upgrade.
That's okay.
But SUNY, thanks for coming in. We really want to find out what Zonta's doing in this, since it was kind of under the umbrella that this whole thing took part. As long as we're talking about workplace, someone who is in the workplace a whole bunch is Kelly Dozier, Mad Dog Construction, and very much on the forefront of just community involvement all over the place. Kelly, is there anything you're not involved with?
I'm sure there's many things. There's a lot of people in this town that are very involved in the community. That's what makes it such a special community.
Indeed it is. And we want to get your take on how you put together a workplace policy and all that sort of thing. So we'll be touching base on that. And we had mentioned Chris Del Marco of Legal Services in North Florida. And boom, she's right here.
Hey, good morning. And thank you. I always appreciate an opportunity to talk about these extremely important issues.
How did this whole thing get started? Oh, and by the way, we're going to be joined on the phone with Dr. Elmira Mangum of Florida A&M University here momentarily. But who wants to start? How did this thing on the 2nd happen? SUNY.
I would like to go. Well, Zonta Club of Tallahassee, as you know, is part of Zonta International. And Zonta International has started in 1919. And one of the many causes is ending violence against women. And that's part of its mission, is advancing the status of women, and part of that is ending and reducing violence or negative impact on women. And it's, and especially Zonta Club of Tallahassee is made up of professional women in the workplace. And of course, we're so keenly aware of economic security for women in the workplace as part, you know, as part of a breadwinning or part of or the breadwinner in the family. And so one of the missions is service and advocacy, and this is our advocacy piece and our committee on awareness and advocacy as part of the 16 Days of Activism and Zonta Says No to End Violence Against Women. Thought, well, we need to raise awareness in the community of what Zonta is and what one of its missions is. And Robin Thompson is our expert in this panel and has been working on this for a very long time, and we thought, well, let's, you know, get the committee and get something going. And this is how December 2nd happened.
Boy, and you brought in people from, I mean, all over the community, private and public sector. And it was a great cross-section of just kind of the movers and shakers here in the community. Robert, quantify the problem, because there still are, I think, a lot of folks who say, well, gee, that, yeah, I know of domestic violence, and occasionally it may spill over into the workplace, but I don't have any personal knowledge or experience with this. How bad is this?
Well, I think it's one of the things where we have to kind of take a larger view at first and say, overall, a woman will face intimate partner violence, one in three women in her lifetime. So we know that it is an extremely prevalent phenomenon. And then we also know from studies that at one point, 26% of the women in the workplace will be looking at an issue of intimate partner violence or sexual assault, which is also what these policies cover, or stalking. So we know that the workplaces are affected at one time or another. And so with that level of prevalence and knowing that, you know, this kind of violence does indeed come to work, we really thought, hey, let's do whatever we can in the community to, number one, raise awareness of it, and two, give people some really practical tools on what to do. And I should also add, you know, we built on this, and this is one of the great things about our community, is the Commission on the Status of Women and Girls, which was created by the county and the city. It focused on this issue a couple of years ago, and what Zonta's done is been able to kind of take what was started there and, you know, continue on the effort to build awareness and to make our community safer.
A previous workplace that I was associated with had, I mean, talk about an open door policy. Anyone could just kind of come strolling in from the main lobby and go anywhere they wanted. We had, I guess this was about 8 or 9 years ago, a situation whereby a domestic partnership kind of went south, and he showed up at the workplace and was looking for her, and luckily was able to be escorted out without any other muss or fuss. But immediately our workplace went into lockdown mode, and we put up key access doors and all of that sort of thing. Kelly Dozier, is that the first line of defense? You, number one, do a lockdown when you think you may have that kind of a problem, or what do you do?
Well, the main thing, and I think what the group is trying to advocate here, is to think about it before it happens, to be prepared for the situation so you're not dealing with it as it walks in the door. And I think that if a policy had been in place, perhaps the employee who was experiencing this issue might have felt comfortable and trusting in their employer to let them know that this was going on, so that the employer could have prepared and been ready before this man came in the door. And so I think that's key in setting this up. As far as how you react to it, I think some of these policies help you know how to react to it and prepare for it. And it may involve rekeying the office, making sure that you have special security, especially if you're aware that this could happen. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, you know, one of the biggest ways to help keep people safe at work is to change the routines. And what we know about domestic violence, and what we've known over the many years that this issue has been researched, is that it's about power and control. So it's about the abuser's need and the many tools that that person uses to control the victim. So the abuser will know, obviously, where the victim works, what time they go to work, what door they go into to go to work, where they sit. So if they've been sitting at a particular workstation or a particular office for the last 10 years that they've worked there, then, you know, as tensions in the relationship escalate, that is not the best place for them to be. So effective workplace policies, anti-violence policies, contain safety accommodations such as changing the workstation, even better, having an offsite, change the physical location if that's possible, different parking options, maybe changing the shifts. The type of things where somebody is not caught unawares, as Kelly was saying, if this is done in advance, it greatly increases the safety of the victim.
Of course, we know that anyone who is involved in a relationship where there is an element of violence may also be dealing with some denial. And on top of that, the fear that if I say anything to my employer, I become a liability. I may lose my job. I'm not going to say squat. How do you get people more comfortable with leveling with their employer and say, hey, I've got a potential problem that you need to be aware of because we don't want to bring it inside? What do you do, Robin?
Yeah, I think one of the pieces, Kelly mentioned this, and it's really true, is that if there's a policy in place, and we actually saw this play out when the city and the county adopted their policies, we heard some stories back where when a policy is put in place, those who are victims or survivors know that they won't be fired because it lays out what will happen if you disclose. And that assurance really helps people to be able to disclose and then access help. And that could be calling Refuge House. That could be getting a protection order. That could be doing any number of things. And then when that person informs the employer, they know that they won't be fired. They'll be helped there. As Chris said, maybe they'll move place, you know, their workstation or change their shift and change up the routine so it's a safer thing. So that is a really important piece of this. And I often say, if you build it, they will come. Because mm-hmm. as I said, those prevalence numbers are absolute. And so you know that there are survivors out there. And at some point, too, maybe this morning, we can talk. We also know that there are perpetrators in the workplace, and we have to talk about how policies deal with that side of the equation. But, yeah, they're definite. And then the other part, employers that think about doing this know that, gosh, what is more cost-effective for me to lose an employee, to fire an employee that I've spent years training, who is an asset to my organization? Why would I want to lose that person? How can I build a most effective workplace? And so it's really in the employer's best interest to say, let's figure out how to make this situation safe and make for an effective, productive worker in our organization.
And just consider that another part of building a productive and a supportive kind of workplace, just like with anything else. Talking about domestic violence and how it impinges on our workplaces and what can be done proactively to mitigate those kinds of things and also respond to them when they do happen. Your input, too, on Perspectives this morning, 414-1234, 800-926-8809. We'll be right back. Issue of domestic violence and how it impacts our workplaces. Our topic this morning on Perspectives. Again, 414-1234. A story or a comment, anything you'd like to share with us, or 800-926-8809 if long distance. Joining our expert panel of folks this morning is the president of Florida A&M University, Dr. Elmira Mangum. Madam President, thank you so much for agreeing to come on and talking a bit about this really critical issue. You were part of the original discussion back at the FSU College of Law on the second. What were some of the major points you made during your presentation?
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk with you about violence and abuse. Some of the major points that I made was that I believe that domestic violence and the mistreatment of people in the workplace as well as in our community is something that we cannot and should not tolerate. I think that also that domestic violence against men and women begins with several steps, I think, that deals with name-calling, with being abusive, and issue of control. And people that are involved in these incidences and occurrences should always remember that they are not to blame for the behavior of others, and they did not incite it or cause it, and that we should be concerned about the steps that lead to domestic violence and violence in the workplace. The things, like I mentioned, such as name-calling and insensitivities associated with communication and with relationships and certain freedoms that are allowed people in a workplace. My concern is that our community and society in general tolerates too much of the predatory types of behaviors that lead to violence in the workplace and at home.
So it sounds like you're advocating that all people in workplace situations need to be a lot more sensitive to some of these early tripwires that could indicate there's going to be something much more serious going on if the situation is not addressed promptly, right?
That's exactly what I'm saying. I also believe that it's all of our responsibilities when we see these types of behaviors that could escalate to call them out, to address them in the workplace by providing the resources in the community for people to seek assistance before something actually happens. There are many resources in our community, as I understand, and I would behoove, I guess, all of the people that are in positions to see abusive situations in the making to provide the victims with opportunities to seek help and also point them in the directions where help is actually available to them to remove themselves from situations that would escalate.
Terrific. Let's go to the phones and get Julie involved in the conversation here, too, giving us a call on perspectives. Hi, Julie. How are you?
You see what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah. Hello, Julie.
Yes.
Yes. Go ahead, ma'am. You're on.
Okay.
And you better turn down the radio, too. I kind of hear us coming back at us 7 seconds later. So.
Let me charge it.
There we go.
Okay.
Much better. Okay. Go ahead, Julie.
All right. So what I was saying is that when you are talking about putting policies in place on domestic violence in the workplace, kind of it's not possible to put, you can't really put a law on people's behaviors or belief systems or their sensitivities. So when you're thinking about making policy in workplaces, you want to think about having people trained to make, if you want people to come forward, then the workplace has to become more friendly. Mm-hmm. For, and not just for domestic violence, again, it's like for any violence. You need to pay attention to people who are acting different from how they normally act, if they're withdrawn or if they're, you know, more huffy and puffy. These are things that people sometimes ignore and say, oh, that's just the way they are. But you have to be more sensitive and make the workplace more sensitive towards people who are in these situations so that they know that they can come forward. Again, there's this stigma that still has always been attached to if you're in a violent situation, there's something wrong with your character. Mm-hmm. It's a re-victimization of the victim. There's something wrong with you. And that's not true at all. It's about sensitivity. And, you know, just like all of the things that are going on right now, you can't make these things into law. The people have to care. It has to come from a behavior or a belief system of care. And if we operate in a care and a belief system of care, then things will start to change. People will come forward. They'll feel more comfortable talking about the things that are happening to them if they need service or if they need help.
Yeah, I see people nodding their heads all around the table here, Julie. Really, really good point. Chris, what did you think?
Yeah, no, I think Julie made excellent points. And, you know, one of the ways that workplaces can show that they actually care about their employees and that they care about these issues is by displaying information. You know, for example, if you walk into a place and you see a refuge house brochure that has the rip-off numbers, you know, for where people can rip off the little tab to call the 24-hour hotline, you know, that makes you think that place understands that this is an issue that our society deals with, and here's information and resource for me. And effective workplace policies, one of their main components is information on available resources, employee assistance programs where folks are versed in what the resources are in town and the dynamics of domestic violence, and at a minimum, the local domestic and sexual violence information. We're fortunate in our area to have Refuge House, which has a 24-hour hotline and does safety planning and free counseling and safe shelter. So making that information available in the workplace, I think, gives employees some sense that the employer cares.
And for the employer, Dr. Mangum, if I can ask you, what does the policy look like at FAMU right now? And is that going to be modified or changed going forward?
Well, we have a policy that was developed some time ago, and what we it protects all of the rights of all of our employees, and it's been in place. Our EEO office and our legal counsel reviews that policy. Much of it falls under our Title IX presentation, where we have forms that are provided to each employee. And they are also available online, and the policy for people to review and also provide reports to their supervisors and next level up, all the way through a point where the investigation takes place within our legal office, and it's assigned to an attorney to look at and define relief. Our policy is reviewed every year, and it was just recently reviewed and approved by our Board of Trustees at our last meeting. So we do review our policy every year, and part of our training is that we go to every department and have the training conducted by our staff and let the employees know what their opportunities are and what their responsibilities are with regard to reporting and also to report any incidences that would occur.
Okay.
So I think we are continuing to keep it updated.
All right, thank you. Kelly Dozier, though, for an organization like Mad Dog Construction that may not have the extent of resources available to an institution such as Florida A&M University, do you have a similar kind of thing? I mean, you don't have a huge legal staff or other internal resources you can pull on to say, okay, come up with a policy.
That's true. And so there are resources available that Robin and Zonta have made available, wonderful web pages where you just go in there and it walks you through the policy, puts your company name in the blanks, fills it all out. It might take about an hour to read it all through and understand what it's saying. What we actually haven't quite adopted the policy. We're in the process of doing this. I have partners that we all need to sit down and talk about it and think about how it will impact our company. But in going through the process of reading through the policy, the main emphasis is creating a workplace environment where the victim feels comfortable that to come to the employer and share this information, and that the employer will not judge them, that they will embrace the situation and do everything they can to help them work through the situation. So providing confidentiality, setting up a sense of trust, and that the business does care about the situation and will do what they can to help. So that's the emphasis, and these resources really make it easy to do.
Okay. And Robin Thompson, for those who just joined us here, how do folks access that kind of template to help them come up with their own policy through the resources here of Zonta?
Yeah, let me give you that resource information. One is a website called workplacesrespond.org. And on that website, you can go to what Kelly described, a template that helps you walk through. It highlights all the issues that you need to go through and to kind of process. And I really want to say thank you and commend Mad Dog for what it's doing, because the thing about these policies is it's looking at the specifics that is outlined in the template, but it's really a process. You have to sit down with the others in your organization. If you're in a large organization, you're sitting down with your security force and your HR and your EAP and your legal staff, and you're kind of going through this and saying, okay, how do we deal with domestic violence specifically, sexual assault specifically, dating violence and stalking? And those things are outlined so that you have a process in developing the policy. The policy gets implemented. And then very importantly, there's an extensive training period afterwards so that – and I know we might be hearing from Vince Long later, but the county has done this wonderfully in that they've developed materials. They've done training for leadership. They've done training for supervisors. And they've gone through – so it's an extensive process that's much more than, as you're saying, filling in the blanks. It's and that's what's the heart and soul of the process. Working later to protect the survivors.
You mentioned Vince Long, Leon County Administrator. He's going to be joining us momentarily, but I wanted to give Dr. Mangum a chance here for any final comments that she might have as far as dealing more, I guess, comprehensively, cohesively with the whole problem of domestic violence when it comes to an institution of higher learning such as Florida A&M University. Can this even be included in a larger curriculum, Dr. Mangum, so that the students and not just the staff and employees of the university are also kind of part of this whole?
Absolutely. And in fact, part of our program is to educate our students especially about the services that are available to them. And we offer our students basically six resources to deal with this issue. And it's one of affirmation where they are able to share, as was stated earlier, their experiences and confidence. We also have a commitment to the safety to ensure that they have the opportunity to avoid, you know, predator types of behavior. We provide overnight shelters to avoid some things if they were to occur in the residence halls. We have the health services, the counseling services, as well as we offer academic adjustments for schedules and psychological services for our students, as well as our police department. And we also have the criminal, I guess, and the administrative options that are also available to our students. But most importantly, I think, is that we include the training for the faculty as well as the law enforcement in responding to any student concern with regard to anything that they would bring up as it relates to Title IX sexual assault or any other types of violence against them. The mental health counseling, I think, is very important. All of our regulations are published, but we do have, I think, what is really critically important for our students is a flow chart that actually tells them step one, step two, and it's available to all of our staff, as well as in the dorms for our students to consider, and the policy is published. We want to hear from them, and we do hear from them, and we have process and procedure, step-by-step guide, if you will, a Venn diagram where they know what steps to take next. And that's very important in our in an educational community, that they feel comfortable with that process and that they are aware of it and know how to initiate and activate it.
You have added an immeasurable amount of great material to the discussion, President Mangum. We sure do appreciate your checking in with us and for continuing to keep this this issue viable and working on it so diligently at Florida A&M University. FAMU President Dr. Elmira Mangum, our phone-in guest here of On Perspectives this morning. And thank you, Madam President. We sure appreciate
thank
that.
Thank you.
414-1234 is something you'd like to kick in on our discussion of domestic violence in the workplace with our great panel, Robin Thompson, Crystal Marco, SUNY Raymaker, Kelly Dozier, and soon to be joined by a gentleman by the name of Vince Long from Leon County. Would love to hear from you, too. Candy's giving us a ring right now. Hi, Candy. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hi, that's Candy for Cultural Arts, Natural Design International, a community organization where I'm a graduate student at FSU, and we like to talk about bringing in to community resources. There are a lot of good community resources already out there, like Refuge House and other organizations that have been mentioned, but social workers are being trained and are out there, you know, utilizing, doing this work in the community, and sometimes smaller businesses or even large businesses can bring in community resources that are in the community, culturally specific, that can actually work with different populations and train staff and management on some of the issues that are prevalent in that community. So I think that there's a lot more using the community resources that can be done, because the people are out there working in the trenches and they actually know a lot of what's happening in those different communities and can keep the pulse of what's happening with the small, with the businesses that are around and workplaces.
Oh, that's a wonderful point. I was just thinking, too, like resources including the FSU College of Social Work. They have done an incredible amount of research. They have even prepared all sorts of information to going out to law enforcement agencies nationwide to clue them in on the whys and the wherefores of domestic violence and how to respond to those kinds of calls, too. So
exactly. And there are many in numbers. So, and they are being trained. We do have a rigorous training that we go through. But more so than that, they are always out there working with people and have a different kind of understanding, you know, of what's needed when, you know, with the as far as being ethically and all these other things that are not happening but that need to happen. And they're not, they're being underutilized, you know, and this is something, this is another resource for the community, you know, to use your community in the proper way. There, like I said, there's organizations that are out there doing work with communities all the time, know the people, know their needs, and they should be utilized.
Absolutely. And Suni, just like Zonta, what you bring to the table as far as providing this template for workplaces to come up with, hey, we plug in our information and we can get at least the skeleton of a policy that we can adopt.
Right. And that's, it shows like this in, you know, community awareness events where someone who may have no idea may ask their employer, hey, do we have such a policy, and, you know, why not, or what's in our policy? Also, maybe you have a friend or a neighbor that is going through some issues and they can, you know, maybe plug that person into these types of resources and say, you know, I've heard of this group called Zonta. What do they do? And so, you know, our website has some of the information, has the template, has Robin's contact information, and it also will direct you to the Zonta International website. So it's zontatallahassee.org.
Very good. We're going to be checking in with Leon County Administrator Vince Long momentarily right here on Perspectives. Again, the number to call, 414-1234, 800-926-8809. Email perspectives at WFSU.org. We shall return. Back on Perspectives. By the way, a thank you very much to Kelly Dozier of Mad Dog Construction, one of our panelists today. She had to slip out a little bit early. And we also recently said goodbye to Dr. Elmira Mangum over at Florida A&M University. Our panelists remain Robin Thompson, Tallahassee attorney, Chris Del Marco with Legal Services in North Florida, Suni Raymaker of Zonta Club of Tallahassee, and the incredible Vince Long, administrator of Leon County. He joins us by the phone. Hey, Vince.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me. Important topic and great panel discussion. I was able to catch the last few minutes.
Well, we were saying off the air before we got on here that instead of the, on this most wonderful of holiday seasons, may you and yours, da-da-da-da-da-da, which everyone sends out, Leon County, though, sent to its employees a different message this go around. Talk about that.
Oh, the email that we sent out to our employees, it was just recognized that, you know, domestic violence and sexual violence and stalking and issues like that, we all, I think, have heard anecdotally over the years that they tend to spike over the holiday season. And it's just one of those touches that we wanted to reach out to our employees and again, reinforce our newly created policy and our training opportunities and more than anything else, just perhaps, you know, be a voice that says, hey, you know, there's somewhere to go, there's somewhere to turn, there are resources here, and again, we thought we might be able to reach out at a time when people might be availing themselves of that. And we recognize that oftentimes that really people just need to have someone ask them what's going on. And I know sometimes we all tend to want to, you know, mind our business and matters like these, and I think we have a sort of a natural inclination to that. But I think we recognize as employers that that sometimes we do, both as fellow employees and employers. Just maybe that's the nudge someone needs to know that there's someone there that they can turn to when they need that kind of help.
So what does Leon County's policy look like right now, Vince?
Sure. Well, real quick, we have a newly implemented domestic violence, sexual violence, and stalking policy. And obviously, I need to say that we could not have done it without the help that we received from Robin Hassler Thompson and Zonta and others there. Meg Baldwin from Refuge House helped us on our training and our brochures that we have developed to assist. So there's no way that we could have addressed the issue as comprehensively as we have without that. So I need to say that right at the beginning here. When Robin first came to me about developing such a policy, and a policy, as I've said before, may have perhaps gone beyond the mere expectations of what a policy should be, it really fit who we are at the county. It fits sort of our culture at the county, both in terms of the progressive policy approach of the Board of County Commissioners, but also, of course, in terms of the work environment that we try to strive to create for our employees. And also, as one of the largest, most visible employers in the community, it fit in terms of the type of example that we like to set in this area. And as I mentioned, it is very comprehensive. It's very specific, which I've learned under the tutelage of Robin and others, that it needs to be specific. It can't just be buried in sort of a harassment policy, but it needs to very clearly articulate the organization's stance on the issue, and then have very specific, identifiable steps for employees and coworkers to take, and again, which very clearly identifies the resources that are available to people. And it's important on our policy. We really stress that we don't expect our employees to be the experts, but we do expect them to recognize the signs, and we do expect some very specific approaches for them to take in terms of helping their fellow employees.
Hearing this, though, I can think there might be some employers who think, red flag. The moment you put something in writing as a policy, there is a tacit admission. This could be a problem. If you have a problem, you may be looking at potential litigation. Maybe it's best not to do anything. And we'll handle it if it comes up. But otherwise, no problem here. Nothing to see. Move along. Robin, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that is, as we call it, the head in the sand approach to doing this. And I really, Vince, thank you so much for all you've done and that the county's done, because I think by doing what you've done, you've actually protected yourself more from something bad happening. And whether that's litigation or whether it's an incident at the workplace or whether that's, you unwittingly having on staff a perpetrator who's using county resources to perpetrate this violence. I mean, there is so much more to be gained by having an explicit policy and training people on it so they know how to respond. And that's whether it's a coworker who might, as you said, think something's going on, make a recommendation to that coworker for resources or talk to a supervisor. You know, whether it is an explicit, we have a policy, this is what we do, here's our expert on staff, please see that person if you have any questions. That's what the county's policy does, and a good policy does, focus resources. Or whether it's, co-employee to co-employee, co-worker to co-worker saying, hey, look, I've just heard, we've got a policy, don't worry, you won't get fired, or here's where you can get help. Those things are invaluable. And I think the head in the sand analogy is a good one, and it's really not a safe place to be as an employer. You want to be out there and have people know what's expected and what your staff should be doing.
Well, not only that, but what is the impact on productivity in workplaces where you have employees who come in who are dealing with this day after day after day? They can't focus on what they're supposed to be doing. So, Chris?
Yeah, absolutely. If people don't feel safe at their job, they can't do their job. They can't concentrate. I think it's an important point to make is that it's not just the victims that are in danger coworkers, colleagues are also in danger. I mean, it behooves everybody to get a policy in place. When we were talking earlier, it made me think, you know, most workplaces have policies regarding, internet security and protecting the financial information. So why are we going to protect those things more than the people that actually work mm-hmm. at the office?
And, you know, Tom, one of the statistics that we found was that over $727 million is lost every year in productivity in the United States because of this, because victims can't be productive at work. They might not be able to concentrate. They might have missed days. They might have all kinds of impacts. And that's over 7.9 million paid work days that are also lost. So it is a huge impact on productivity.
And I can imagine, Suni, you might even impact on health care costs and things like that. How many and I think we all know at least one coworker who has come in and, gee, Heather, what's with the black eye? Oh, I ran into a door. Oh, yeah, right.
Uh-huh. Sure. I think one of our speakers was
Mark O'Brien.
Mark, thank you, Robin. And he talked about the healthcare impact of domestic violence and what they see at the hospital. And I think that was it's a discussion item that many people don't even think about. But I think it's a huge healthcare impact to it. It's a workplace impact and just a mental impact, which decreases productivity.
And if I could add, it's not just the treating of, you know, for example, injuries that result from domestic violence, but the stress, the trauma, and the post-traumatic stress disorder that a lot of victims experience can carry on for years. So, you know, the whole point of any sort of intervention with domestic violence is let's get there ahead of time. You know, let's prevent tragedies in our city from occurring. We know that victims are in the most danger when they leave or have left an abusive relationship. There is no way that these issues won't carry over into the workplace with the amount of time that we spend.
Yeah, go ahead, Vince.
Go ahead.
Well, and I was just going to add to that too. And certainly, you've got the experts there, and I'm not one of them on this, but I'm learning through the training that Robin mentioned that we've been doing for all employees. And you know, when you talk about performance, and you talk about the harassment that's perpetrated in many of these cases, you know, part of the intent on behalf of the perpetrator is to, you know, one of the control mechanisms is to further isolate, the victim, not only from friends and family and sort of the things that you've heard about, but I've got a new appreciation for one of the other sort of sabotaging things that happen, of course, is at work. If I can be a disruptive force to this person at work and make her performance suffer as a result of my harassment, maybe I'm going to call the office 600 times, in the course of an hour or two and lead to that performance, then again, maybe she'll get fired. And so then now I have even more control over her in this case. So again, it's really important that performance is, you know, directly impacted oftentimes, and some of the time it's not even impacted as a result of the victim's own behavior.
This is such a sea change, Vince, from a lot of the, I don't want to say traditional because it's not traditional in a good way, but the old school attitudes, which is, you got personal problems, you leave them at home, you come to the workplace. You know, we don't care what's going on in your life, and if it impinges on your work life, you're out of here. What has led to this change in attitude, do you think?
Well, I have to tell you, I've been in those meetings, Tom, you know, over the years, and sitting across the table from HR directors and from attorneys, and having that back and forth of, you know, what is our role and what is our you know, liability, and having the and oftentimes, you know, I think as a result of that, maybe sometimes we made the right decisions in those areas, and maybe sometimes we didn't, and And this is what, you know, Robin says, that the worst thing to do is deal with these issues on a case-by-case basis. You see, Robin, I was listening.
You're excellent. Thank you so much.
But that's really, and so I think it's just been, it's become more obvious over the years that, you know, when somebody, you know, like Robin and others sort of show you where to go next, it becomes pretty obvious. And I think you have to have the right culture in place as an organization to say, yeah, this isn't scary. This is part of who we are as an organization. This is a responsibility that we have.
And, you know, one of the things I remember when we did the leadership training, when you had me over there, we were talking to your leadership team, Vince, was your approach, which was, this is just what you do if you want to have an effective workplace, if you want to have our employees doing their best on behalf of the taxpayers in this area, is you want to give them the power to do this. And it's the same whether it's the private sector, the nonprofit sector, the public sector, is you're looking at helping people do their jobs better. And I think there's just a better kind of acceptance that that's the case. And, you know, at the December 2 event, you also mentioned that this is important to workplace culture, to understand that this is happening. So when you're looking at an issue that's more prevalent when it comes to its impact on women and families, that you're saying our organization cares about everybody equally, and we're going to do something to make a difference in their lives.
Given the fact that we are so government-centric in this town, we now have the universities and Tallahassee Community College, because President Murdaugh was also part of this get-together back on December 2nd. They're forming policies. They're coming on board with this kind of realization. We have city and county, obviously. What about state government agencies, of which we have a ton? Where are we with those folks?
Well, it's interesting. A number of years ago, and this was during the Childs administration when I was with them, the governor and cabinet adopted a policy on this very issue to focus on this, because we had an horrific murder-suicide happen at the Northwood Mall, where a state employee was killed by another state employee who then killed himself. Needless to say, we want to make sure we do this work in advance to avoid that ever happening. But the trigger on that was, look at what the state is doing. So a couple of the state agencies that are really exemplary on this right now, I know that the Department of Children and Families has a really excellent policy. The Department of Corrections had one. The Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles had one. And it's one of those things where, as President Mangum mentioned, they really merit having to go back and look at over and over again. And also it's important, and we didn't talk about this too much, you alluded to it, Tom, is that every workplace is a little different. So a university has faculty, staff, and students. You might have unions present. You might have people who carry guns as part of your workplace. All these things make the development of a policy sort of a unique process for you. And a lot of the state agencies went through that. I think it merits another look. I don't know where all the policies are in terms of state government, but you're right. We're a huge employer. The state of Florida is a huge employer. So what is it doing, and do they need another fresh look?
Yeah, and we have new leaders at the helm of many of these agencies, as we've been hearing over the past couple of weeks, you know, with some reshuffling of people and the secretaries and the directorships of these various agencies. So that might be something. Vince, you got any contacts over there?
Of course. I've got a very well-worn path between my office and over there.
You know what? One of the things, though, I have to say, the Commission on the Status of Women, when I was working with them and the counties in helping the county and city develop their policy, is the county policy is really good, and people should look at it as a model for the aspects that they can use. So they're not starting from scratch, not just because of that one national website that we shared earlier, but we have a local policy that cites to Florida law that defines things that are appropriate in our community as in terms of resources. So even locally, we have an easier path to getting a good one, thanks to the hard work of the county and the city of Tallahassee, as they both develop these policies.
Great. Robin, once again, mention the contact information here for the template through Zonta that employers can at least check out and say, okay, here is a starting point that we can branch out from.
Yes. The Zonta website is zonta-tallahassee.org, and you can have links to all those, and workplacesrespond.org. And some of the corporate private businesses can look at a group called caepv.org. That's a corporate Corporate Alliance to Prevent Partner Violence. They also have great information there. So it's not for lack of information that people would be working, you know, having a problem here. There's plenty to go around.
Mr. Vince Long, any final thoughts from you, sir, before we wrap her up here today?
I don't think so, Tom. Just thank you very much for talking about this today. Again, really important topic. And again, if Robin cited our policy previously, and you know, it's one, if we can help pay it forward to some extent with our policy, we'd be happy to share anywhere we can.
Thank you, sir. Vince Long, administrator for Leon County. Crystal Marco.
Thank you so much for having us. It cannot be said enough how important it is to have a policy at all places of employment, as Robin said, from the smallest nonprofit to the largest corporation and the largest nonprofit to the smallest corporation. These are issues that affect all of us, and it behooves all of us to step up and protect people in our community.
Thank you. Cindy Raymaker, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And, of course, Robin, again.
And can we mention the Refuge House hotline here?
Absolutely.
850-681-2111. If anyone out there needs help right away, please call that number.
Thank you, Robin Thompson. Appreciate that. And thank you, folks, for your input today on Perspectives, which is produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls doing all the heavy lifting today. And next week it's going to be holiday music time. We'll join you then.
Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.